From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey, welcome to Let's Talk Wyoming. I'm so excited, guys, for you to hear this interview. This is one of the latest of my series of interviews, just talking to lawmakers and those across the state who are movers and shakers. This interview is with Representative Martha Lawley from House District 27 in the Bighorn Basin. She and her husband, Roger, live in Warland. Martha is a sophomore legislator. This is her second term in office, and she's had an amazing 68th general session this year. She sponsored 7 bills, 4 of which made it across the finish line. That's a really good record. There's a great quote from Indira Gandhi, who was prime minister, I think, in the late 60s and then also in the 1980s. She said something along the lines of, there are two kinds of people, those who do the work and those who take the credit. Try to be in the first group. There's less competition there. And that could not describe Martha Lawley better. Here's a woman who does the work. She's done a lot of work, 4 bills across the finish line, all of these bills have significant interest for our state and for her constituents. And that's an amazing feat. And it's probably one of the many reasons why I like her and why I'm honored to consider her a friend. I hope you enjoy this interview, guys. Hold for Representative Martha Lawley. Well, welcome. I have a great guest today, and I'm very excited to have her. I consider her a friend. So it is very exciting to be interviewing Representative Martha Lawley.
Well, hello, Amy. It's really great to be with you.
Yes. Not as if we never see each other or anything like that.
Right.
Yes. So, Martha, tell me a little bit about yourself for the audience.
Well, Amy, I grew up in Wyoming. I grew up in Warland and graduated high school from Warland High School. I went to University of Wyoming, graduated with a degree in political science, and I had always wanted to go to law school since I was in high school. And so I, after I graduated from University of Wyoming, I went to Baylor Law School and then began to practice law in Houston, Texas, right after I graduated, and was a business litigator in Houston for many years, about 14 years. I loved it. It was a great career, great opportunity. But one day I woke up and it just determined it wasn't Wyoming. That might be a slight exaggeration in that I just for a long time began to be discontent about how did I end up in the 5th largest city at that time in the world, and a little girl from Warland, Wyoming. And I missed a lot of the things about Wyoming values, our way of life. And I wanted my children to experience that as well. And so eventually we made it back. We moved back to Warland in 2001. And that was a great adventure. I have 3 children. They're all married now. I have 4 grandchildren, 2 in college and then 2 in middle school. So it's a good spread. But I love being a nana to those 4 grandchildren. And I'm married. My husband, Roger, is probably I couldn't be doing what I'm doing in the legislature without his support. Not just permission or not just okay, but he's in it with me. And so that makes a big difference because we can be here together at the legislature. Yeah. So I've been involved a lot in my community. That's actually one of the things when I returned to Warland that was really important to me.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't until I was older and much older and had left that I realized how much of who I was, my values and what I wanted out of life stemmed from growing up in a little town like Warland, Wyoming, where there were so many people that poured into my life, whether it was the person that taught baton lessons in the summer or 4-H leaders, Girl Scout leaders, church leaders, and all of them gave a lot of their personal time to invest in me. And so when I went back, I wasn't practicing law anymore. I kind of closed my practice, wanted to spend time with my kids and get involved in the community, involved in my church. And so over time, when you're open and you have time, people find lots of things for you to do. And so I had a lot of many opportunities to serve in my community, and I really enjoyed that opportunity.
Nice. So you've probably given the explanation, but I'm going to ask it, why politics? Why pivot into politics?
Well, I've always been interested in politics. Obviously, that was my major.
Always sorry. Yeah.
But more as a political observer, I always envisioned myself as a running a campaign or a political strategist, because that's the part I always liked about studying politics. But I never really did that. I, again, went on to law school. But I never actually aspired to be a candidate, truly. And so when the previous person that was in my seat, Mike Greer, decided he was going to retire, he contacted me and asked me if I would consider running. And I initially said, no, thanks. And then he began to send people that he knew were my friends, people that had gone to high school with me or that I had worked on some boards with and in Worland, and began
smart
to
guy.
Tell me what a great, I later referred to them. He called me some weeks later, and I kind of referred to the group as his posse.
Right.
That he had kind of, they had all done their job and contacted me. And, you know, over time, I really had to wrestle with the reality of why not? Why not? I love the state of Wyoming. I believe very strongly in our constitutional system nationally, our state constitution, and that these things matter, and that, again, it works because people get involved. And so I really didn't have a good answer for why not. And so eventually I said, sure, I'll do it. I will.
Nice. Now, before we pivot, asking about your family, are your children in Wyoming? Do you have any family here as well?
Yes, I have a brother that lives in Gillette, and I have another brother that lives in Moreland. Sometimes he also goes to Arizona where his family is. And then my dad is still living. He's in a nursing home in Worland. And then I have our middle daughter is a nurse, and she is married. They live in Worland. She married a local boy, and that's where my two youngest grandkids are, and actually within walking distance of where I live. So very blessed.
So you get to be Nana every day, almost. That's lovely. That's great. So this is you are a sophomore. You served one term. This is your second term in office. You had your first general session. What did you want to accomplish this session, and did you accomplish it?
Well, I would say there's a couple things I really wanted to accomplish. First one was to focus on some key bills, key issues that really were important to my constituents. Some of them things that came up during the campaign repeatedly, and people even asking specifically, will you run a bill on this, or will you do something about that? And they were important issues, not only to the people in my district, but really around the state. You were hearing more and more about things like boys in girls' restrooms, boys trying to play in girls' sports, and those kinds of things. And so there were some other issues I was concerned about, but any issue I was concerned about was an issue I felt deserved my full attention, and to take the time to develop a bill that would effectively interact in that issue in a way that would be to the benefit of the people of Wyoming, and particularly the people in my district.
Yeah. So how many bills did you bring?
Well, I had five key bills that I developed. And then there were a couple bills I ran that were not originally in my list of five. Those two were, first of all, a bill that the Wyoming Trust Association asked me to run to make some updates into our trust code. And that bill did not make it out of general file in the time that was required for that to come out. And I'll be bringing it back next time, because it is a adjustment that we need, and it's important that we keep those trust codes up to date. That area of the law is very prescriptive, and it's important for people who are having trusts written for their families, for their generational prep branches and things, that what they write in their trust documents are interpreted correctly to get the outcome they want. So to me, that is a very important part of the law. It's a very unique kind of, so I was happy to run those amendments, but I wouldn't have called them urgent, but hopefully we can get them done next session. So there was another bill I ran that wasn't one of the big five that was a bill that I was just sort of testing the waters in the immigration area. And it was really about what we should ask of our county sheriffs in terms of aligning with the policies of the Trump administration, in terms of what they had planned to do in the immigration area, make sure that we were doing our part in Wyoming. For one reason, just because we should as a state do our part, but also not doing our part, we risk having people maybe come from other states into Wyoming, and it might be less safe. And so to just to test some of that policy, we had some good conversations in the Appropriations Committee on that. In the end, the bill died there, but I really feel like the law enforcement community came out and talked about what they are doing, why they might be want to do this but not do that. So in the end, I felt that was a good exercise, but it really wasn't ready, as we say in the legislature, for prime time.
Mm-hmm.
So that, with those put aside, I would say that the big five really had to do with, first of all, a commitment I had made to my constituents to bring back from last year a bill that was vetoed by the governor on abortion regulation. So it was a bill that basically just sought to align our regulation of surgical abortion clinics with how we regulate other procedures of a similar nature. And that's all the bill did. It did provide for some reporting that we don't currently do in the area of abortion, so we had good records. Also, it required that it be a Wyoming doctor that performed those abortions.
Huh.
And there was some requirement about how far away was the closest hospital that doctor would have admitting privileges in case something went wrong.
Yeah.
So that was the bill. Common sense regulation. So that was number one.
And that bill has passed. And
yes, that bill passed fairly early on, and the governor signed that bill.
Huh.
And I really appreciate his signature on the bill.
What was different between last year and this year with that bill?
That's a really great question. One of the things we did last year is we had two bills. One was surgical abortion, spoke to that. The other one spoke to chemical abortion. But in a budget session, you have to have a two-thirds vote for introduction. And that process takes a long time, not only just to have the vote, but a lot of bills don't get out because of the time taken for those introductions. And so the chemical abortion did not make it out. And so we looked at the rules, and we found a way to roll some of that into my bill. And in the end, that's what the governor didn't like, was that that portion related to the chemical abortion bill. And so this time they were run separately. The governor had told me that he, and in his letter, his veto letter, had mentioned specifically that my bill, as it has been introduced, was a good bill and he would have signed it. Mm-hmm. So we brought it back and he did so. He signed it. So
nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. The other bill is a bill on irrevocable letters of credit. So this is a type of financial instrument that's used to secure certain things, certain transactions. In this case, it has to do with transactions for Department of Environmental Quality bonding. So in lieu of a bond, you can get a financial institution to issue what's called an irrevocable letter of credit to secure that, working much like a bond would work. And that's an acceptable possibility under the DEQ requirements. So the issue was, and this was brought to me by a constituent, and which really makes me even more proud of it, because I feel like it was meeting a specific concern and need of a constituent in my district. The constituent was a credit union, and they had a business a member who was involved in some work at a gravel pit within the Bighorn Basin that they owned, and they wanted to get an irrevocable letter of credit. But the statute simply mentioned banks, didn't define banks. It just mentioned they could be issued by a bank, and a credit union is slightly different than a bank. And so what the bill was to go into the statutes and add that it could be issued by a credit union as well. I worked with DEQ to get the language right and the policy good and understandable, because DEQ also administers, for example, federal bonding in the coal area and other types of areas. So they have to follow the federal bonding rules that are in the federal statute. So we worked to kind of make sure the statute was clear as to when that you could use an irrevocable letter of credit from a credit union in Wyoming, which ended up being a first step, actually, in some big gains by credit unions during this past session. There was another bill that actually allowed credit unions to become depositories of public funds. And so that helped a lot of small communities that have credit unions but don't have banks in their community. So I didn't know that at the time, but my constituent was very happy. I'm happy. I think it was a great move. It opens up opportunities for credit unions, opens up opportunities for operators to have options in what financial institution they use to get irrevocable letters of credit.
So that bill has passed as well.
Passed and was signed by the governor.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The third bill is, again, something that to me is a very important issue, and that is protecting children online. Mm. You know, as a grandmother, I've often been concerned about the changes that are happening in the online environment. Mm. So one side of it is many kids have devices that are connected to the internet. That wasn't something when my children were growing up that was an issue. They did not have those devices, didn't even exist. Now they exist, and many children that are fairly young have hold in their hand a device that can get on the web and get to almost anywhere. And some of those places are not good outcomes. So, on the other side of the internet itself has become a much, there's parts of it that are very dark and have very harmful content in it. So, I introduced a bill, this was House Bill 43, age verification for harmful content. And what it is using some of the advances that we have into some technology called age verification, where we can, through a third-party provider, who that's their business, can verify a person's age before they can enter into any site that has harmful content as described in the statute. So we're really targeting online pornography. And that's
kind of... I would think that most people are used to, I mean, because if you want to... I know you encounter that in some places. If you want to go to like a liquor site or something, you actually have to input information to go in. So it's something similar to that, I'm assuming.
Yes, that's a very good point. Age verification is already used if you were to try to buy cigarettes online, if you have alcohol online. We do a form of age verification in brick and mortar stores if you want to go buy content that is not appropriate for children, but only adults. So really, this was just kind of taking that concept and bringing it into the virtual world. But one of the things that I think it's important to say, maybe to even understand why I would focus on this at this time and why it became an important focus during the session for me, is that pornography on the internet has changed tremendously too over time. Mm. It's much more violent. It's much more graphic. Mm. And children can access it very easily and unintentionally. 58% of the times that a minor accesses for the first time pornography online, it's accidental. They weren't trying to find it.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is. And these porn companies actually target children with enticing little links or pop-up ads and things. And on some apps, you can just with a few clicks, you can get to, a child can just get to porn. They don't even know. They're just making clicks. And so it's a tremendous problem. And there's studies that show how it affects the developing brain of a child, how it impacts their understanding of relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge issue. It has long-term harm for children. Mm-hmm. And so what the bill did was basically define which content providers are covered by the bill. And it's if in their usual course of business, they are producing these kinds of things. And if they are, the statute just clearly says, you must provide age verification. Mm-hmm. That's on you. You can use a third party. You can do many things, but you must provide that. Even if the child is using some VPN or some other device to hide where they're located, they now have the technology to determine and see past that VPN. Sometimes they don't want to see past it, but they can. So it doesn't change the liability. And so it also provides, though, for protection of private information, because there's a difference between verifying your age and verifying your identity. And the most advanced forms of age verification don't actually look at or determine anything about your identity. They're simply verifying your age. So it's been used in Europe for many years. Europe has actually done a great job in this area. They're ahead of us, in part because we have a protection called the First Amendment.
Yeah.
And so, but age verification provides the solution, and it will protect our children online. And so that bill has passed. And as we sit here, I am waiting to see if the governor will sign it. And I really hope that the governor will sign it.
I hope he does as well. Okay. Well, we'll keep everybody updated on that one. Anything else?
Yes. I had two other bills. One of them was House Bill 60, which was a amending of our current sports bill that we have that relates to grades 7 through 12.
You passed that last year, is that correct?
Yes, we passed it last year, which basically clearly states it's an absolute ban on any biological boys playing in girls' sports in grades 7 through 12. My bill, House Bill 60, would have amended that sports bill to include collegiate sports, so our community colleges and University of Wyoming. And so it dealt first with eligibility, that there are no biological boys that will be eligible to play on any collegiate teams in Wyoming public colleges and universities. So that also then had, it was really the only bill that also took an extra step and specifically said that the University of Wyoming and the community colleges will not play, their women's teams will not play teams that have known transgender players.
Which was a real issue this year for Wyoming. We saw it in the headlines.
Yes. It was an issue concerning the women's volleyball team at University of Wyoming, who was put in a position of having to ultimately forfeit several games against San Jose State University that had a known transgender players, as did some other teams in the Mountain West. And that had become a big issue. And in many ways, that's what the bill is targeting, is that kind of situation. It's a known transgender. In this case, San Jose State, there were several players that have played against that team that suffered significant injuries because of the force and that biological difference between that male and the female and the lower net that they have for women's volleyball.
Yep.
That force caused some severe damage to several female students and other universities. So ultimately, University of Wyoming did the right thing, and I was really thankful that they did. But what I was hearing from my constituents was, Martha, that we should just already have that as where we stand in Wyoming. And so that's why I included it in the bill. And so ultimately, that bill did not get past the Senate Education. They ran out of time. It was the very last day. But there was another bill being brought by Senator Wendy Schuller, who I had worked with. It was actually her original sports bill that I then ran on the House side. That's last time. And she and I worked together, and she we kind of put the bills together. It was all the Senate file 44. And we on that, I put some of that policy I had in my bill into her bill.
Oh, wonderful.
And that bill did pass. They concurred in the Senate with the changes that we made over in the House that really put some of the features of my bill, including the feature about the feature and the requirement that University of Wyoming not, women's teams not play teams with transgender players. We amended all that into her bill, and Senate File 44 did pass. And again, it was close to the end of the session, but we're waiting to see what the governor does with that bill as well. So I sort of count that as half a bill because and Senator Schuller is a very gracious person, and she kind of said the same. If we put them together, it's a little bit of both our bills. So I always appreciate senators, other representatives who will work with each other to try to do what's best for Wyoming. And Senator Schuller is always that person who will always work to do what's best for Wyoming. So
wonderful. All right. So those are the bills.
I have one other bill.
Okay.
House Bill 72.
Ah, yeah.
And this was the protecting women's privacy in public spaces. So this bill was, again, another very important bill to me, because I heard this so often on the campaign trail. And we know many people in Wyoming were frustrated about not having anything from the state legislature where we had spoken into what is our policy in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the biggest issues were school districts, colleges, public buildings, and places where public employees worked. And so what this bill did was address that and tried to lay out policy, which is one of the reasons I wanted to speak into some of these kind of issues,
mm-hmm.
is that because I think the policy matters. And to really work diligently, say, are we providing the direction that those who will use this need? Does it bring clarity? Does it give flexibility in certain areas? And does it give them the kind of guidance that they need to make the decisions they need to make? And so the bill deals with bathrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms, overnight trips for schools and universities, and then also things like dorm rooms and other student housing at the collegiate level, so college and university, community colleges and University of Wyoming. So that bill had an interesting journey. There was a similar bill over in the Senate that just dealt with K through 12 educational space.
It was just athletic events. Is that?
Yeah. It as far as the activity side, it only dealt with athletic activities,
yeah.
And it did not address the overnight space, which is getting to be focal point of this issue right now in the schools, is this idea of assignment of rooms when the band goes to state band,
yeah.
Or any
choir
drop
team, right? Yeah.
So again, it's I've heard several situations that have come up, but that bill didn't include that. So in trying to reach a compromise among the bills, because my bill dealt with everything, including beginning with K through 12 space, and then community college, University of Wyoming, and then public buildings, all public buildings. And so the bringer who brought the bill over the Senate side of the bill that was educational space reached out to me and said, hey, I would like to keep that space. You know, he had worked on his bill, and again, similar to what I talked about the sports bill, we worked together, and he agreed that some of my policy that was more specific and dealt with some of the things like the overnight trips and had some different guidance for some different circumstances, he would agree to have that amended into his bill.
Okay.
And so my final bill, House Bill 72, ended up with the K through 12 space taken out, but we still dealt with the educational space at the community college and university level, and then all public buildings.
Wonderful.
That did great. It passed, and the governor signed that.
Okay.
So Wyoming has now spoken with clarity, with consistency, and with policy that is workable and functional on a day-to-day basis within all those spaces. So I'm very proud of that, because I feel like that sets a lot of people's minds at ease.
Mm-hmm.
It just brings some clarity that people need, and we don't have our institutions worried about getting sued no matter what they do.
Yeah.
States decided this is our policy. That's what the role of the legislature is.
And that's an important part of this, right? It's speaking to these things. And as you said, the policy really matters. That sort of that attention to detail and understanding that whether it's public buildings or a K through 12 system, they need that guidance to make it crystal clear.
Yes, I heard that so much during the campaign. And I had been contacted. I had done an op-ed before the session, just talking about these are a couple things I'm going to be talking about, boys and girls sports and boys and girls restrooms. And I was going to be bringing some bills and why that was really important to me and my constituents. But I got a lot of contact from places of different school districts and different situations saying, I'm so glad you're doing that. If you need any help, but we had several folks from school districts testify from other situations also as well. So, to give the legislature some understanding of how this is affecting different people, but how much we had left some of our institutions in a little bit of legal peril. Like they didn't know what to do, and they were one school board member described it to me as just paralyzed. We're just paralyzed, Martha. Yeah. We need the legislature to decide what's the best way to approach this.
Yeah. So that's wonderful, and congratulations. I mean, that's a good book of legislation that you got passed, and it's not an easy feat. And you know, it is not easy to get these things through. In some of those topics are harder topics. I mean, they're emotional topics. People have passion one way or the other, whether it's the abortion ones or in the space of women's privacy and transgender. Why take on issues that are that hard? I mean, I know you've spoken that your constituents have brought this up to you. I think that's probably a general concern across the state, and people have heard it. It's an issue that matters to voters all from east to west. Why take it on?
Well, I will say first, I've always liked the challenge, and they are challenging. But I guess I wanted to strike a balance of what made sense. Again, what was clear, but what was workable. And because it is such an important issue, the effects of not getting it right could be profound. Hmm. So that always motivates me to want to get the policy right. Not to say I always get it right the first time, but my goal is to treat it with the respect it deserves as a difficult topic.
Yep.
Also to have some sense of compassion that this is a difficult issue that we don't understand fully, this new era of gender fluidity. And, but this is why we're here. This is what we do at the legislature. We do hard things. And I guess I wanted to take on that challenge for that very reason, is that if we're going to do it, let's do the very best we can, because if we don't, we could make the problem worse.
Yeah. That's great. And I think you have. I mean, I followed those bills. They're excellent pieces of legislation. I think it's exactly the kind of direction and that our school districts needed, that our public spaces needed. It's now clear. So we're going to pivot. Obviously, you're serving over in the House. Lots of headlines this year. This organization that came from the National Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, has come into Wyoming. They did get the majority, or at least win the leadership in the House of Representatives. You aren't a member of the Freedom Caucus. Why?
Well, Amy, I'm not a member of any caucus, and I don't have any intention of being a member of any caucus, because my caucus is the people in Washakie County and South Bighorn County. And I take that really seriously. I think it goes back to my roots with the Constitution, my love of the Constitution, the love of our system. And it's just important to me. The reason I came to Cheyenne is to represent the people I care greatly about, which is the people in District 27. And the Freedom Caucus, I think all of the caucus, let me just say this, is that the divisions that are becoming so deep, I don't think are for the long-term good of the Wyoming people. And I would love to see us make those caucuses, if they must be there, then let's make them less important and less tribal.
Yes,
is the term I hear often. And let's remember that we are first and foremost citizens of Wyoming who represent good people of Wyoming, and that we have some balance there. And so, but you know, there are things about the Freedom Caucus in particular, since it is gained control of the House, and they were a part of the House when I first started. And there are many people that are members of the Freedom Caucus that I work with every day.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was sent there to do, to work with whoever is elected and whoever has been given that honor to represent.
And it takes those relationships to get pieces of legislation passed.
Yes, it really does. And it matters that you just are willing to have relationships with people. And it's no different than life, in that there I have many friends that I just agree to disagree with them about certain things, but I get to decide if it affects our friendship. We together get to decide if it's going to affect how we can work together on something. But those are really choices that people make, in my view. And my choice is I am going to, for the benefit of my district, I am going to try to have as good a working relationship as I possibly can. I only control part of that equation, but I am going to keep striving for that. That's a value I have, is to keep striving to be able to work with anyone to accomplish what my constituents want to see me accomplish in Cheyenne. So it's always been that way. I would say there's members of the Freedom Caucus that I have a very good relationship with. I would even say they're friends of mine. I share a lot of values with them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the way I look at a solution to the problem is different than they do. I always try to ask myself when working on policy is, am I getting the best conservative approach to the solution mm-hmm. or not? And sometimes there can be several solutions that can truly be conservative.
Yes.
But is this the best one that fits this situation, the best one that fits Wyoming? And that matters to me. And if a problem is a really big one, like some of the ones we just talked about and the bills I brought, it is worthy of a lot of my time and attention and detail. Mm-hmm. Not everybody looks at it that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a real temptation in the legislature for all of us to say, hey, I had a bill on that and I took care of that. But, you know, I know myself as a citizen, I do not like that when I'm told at the federal level that they solved a problem that I was very concerned about, only to find out 6 months later that they did not, in fact, solve that problem. They put a little Band-Aid on it,
yeah. But
they did not solve it. So that probably is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. So that kind of, I think, is something I'm on the lookout for, that, look, I'm not just trying to get attention and, something that's sort of sparkly out there and then say, oh, we took care of that.
The quick fix.
Yeah. So I'm not saying other people are trying to do that, but sometimes that's a temptation to quickly get something out of genuine concern. But, there are times I'll say, well, that probably wouldn't be the way I would approach that. What about this? Did you think about that? Is there, look at these three unintended consequences perhaps? And so one reason that it is important to have good relationships is so that, hopefully there might be space for those conversations.
Yeah.
About, hey, would you be open to an amendment? Have you thought about, like, what about this? How should the bill maybe speak to that? And, it doesn't always work, but it does begin with those relationships. And I think any sort of factionalism, though, creates almost an automatic no, I want, I, this is how I want things to be. And so, oftentimes I find myself in the middle of that, but still, my job is to still navigate it.
Yes.
Whether it's a good day or a bad day.
it is such a collaborative process. There's really no way for it not to be. And that's what was the intention. You all come together, you represent your districts, you all have to work together, you have to collaborate.
Yes, yeah. It is. For the outcomes that benefit the state of Wyoming, we must collaborate. Yes. If we're just looking for personal outcomes, we don't have to collaborate, especially. And that sounds silly, but I found myself saying from time to time as we entered this new legislative session that, look, having the votes does not equal good policy for Wyoming.
Yeah.
So let's use the votes that are here to get the best policy that we can. And I think there are many people that come and want to do that. We had a big freshman class, so they're learning, and my heart goes out to them. I was them 2 years ago. So
you feel their pain. Well, this is a great segue into my second to last question. So obviously, you had a large freshman class. You have the Freedom Caucus, very new to being in such an important leadership position, being Speaker of the House, being Majority Floor Leader, all those positions. There was obviously a lot of headlines. Mixed reviews, I think, are coming out of the session. It just ended. How do you feel the session went?
In many ways, it went better than I expected. Mm-hmm. In that some of my personal bills, I think, were well received in the House side. There were some of the committee bills that died that I had been part of. I serve on both the Education Committee and the Minerals and Business and Economic Development. Some of the bills that we worked on and spent a lot of time on died. That was a little bit disappointing. I think it's still so fresh that I need a little bit more time to reflect, but I would say that I think people did work hard.
Yeah.
They really did. And I think there was a lot of learning. Sometimes a little more focus on the clock and the calendar and managing that as a body on the House side. I think the Senate had their own challenges in that regard. I think the biggest thing I saw that was different this time was less coordination between the Senate and the House.
Yeah.
I can't really say why that happened, but I think that was probably made things a little more challenging.
Yeah.
I was disappointed when the House unilaterally decided they weren't going to do a supplemental budget. When the Senate decided that, I remember it was a Wednesday night, kind of late, and that kind of came out that they had decided they're not going to.
Which was a big deal. That's never happened. It's a big deal that it happened.
Yes. And it became clear the next morning that it was, as I said, a unilateral decision by the Senate.
Yeah.
So there was no discussion, and maybe we shouldn't do one at all, any of us. So I think there were a few things that got caught in that storm that have hurt some groups within Wyoming and some challenges and sometimes some of our more vulnerable folks in Wyoming. And so and that's concerning to me, but I don't really understand all that. Wasn't my job to understand it. But I'm just saying it created a certain amount of chaos at the end as we attempted to grab certain parts of the supplemental budget and try to find ways they might fit in as amendments to existing legislation. By that time, it was a little late in the game.
I mean, it's frustrating for the rank and file when you don't get the information, and it really does throw things into chaos. And it was, it's a historical thing. They have never not passed a supplemental budget. So it really was a big deal.
Yeah.
No doubt.
It was. And I just hope that we haven't left some parts of Wyoming unprotected in that. I know we've gotten some big pieces through and recovered from that, but there are some others I'm still concerned about how they'll be affected between now and the time we do the budget next year.
Well, with those challenges, the loss of the supplemental, but also the delivery of some of your excellent bills, property tax relief bills, other things, do you think Wyoming's future is bright or not?
I always think Wyoming's future is bright because of our children. Mm. We had many times that choirs would come, different organizations of young people would come, girls and boys staters. And it always reminds me that our future is bright, but I do think we are going through a time in Wyoming that is challenging, a time that really serves to call up in all of us an understanding of who we really are and what is it that makes Wyoming great. And if nothing else, do no harm to that.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great answer. I think you are exactly right.
Thank you.
Martha, it is lovely to have you here. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Amy, for having me.
You bet.